This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to Embracing Change. How are you guys doing? So glad to be with you tonight. We got some good conversation coming your way as we continue on in resetting outcomes. And I hope you guys have enjoyed the season so far. If you have any comments or questions or suggestions, even stuff you'd like us to talk about, go ahead and shoot us an email. The email is address is in the description. We would love to hear from you. Tonight's episode is revise equals alteration. And when I look at those two words, they look very similar, but when you were comparing them, while they mean the same thing, they have a little bit of a contrast.
They do. When, you know, we're talking about resetting outcomes, we talked about, you know, last couple of sessions or podcast episodes, we talked about, you know, forgiving and power and those kind of things. And I think before you can even understand your identity and power, as well as forgiven and freedom, there is some revisions that you have to revise, and you have to make some alterations in your life. And I think too often we think about everybody else. And I think that's what you said at the last episode. Until you were able to put yourself at the level of your dad, you could not even see why he would be worthy of forgiveness. And while he would, you know what I mean? You could not even. And so to me, I think we get so self-centered. It becomes all about us, that there's a sense for better outcomes that we have to do some revisions. We have to be willing to revise and alter, you know, and make some alterations. You know, like when you think about, you know, styles and clothing, there's nothing new up under the sun. And if you wait long enough, they come back into style.
Do.
Right. And there's some styles that just never go out. Blue jeans never go out. There may be some alterations or some revisions to them. I remember there used to be dark jeans. Then they were bleached jeans. Then they were, you know, they're still jeans, right?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what I was thinking about. And I think that we're still humans. And I asked a question a few episodes ago, and I said I would get back to it. And the question was, what was our first language?
Oh, yeah.
And this is a good day to really expound on that, because I think we have revised and altered and came to an alteration, which equals alteration. When you have revised something, you alter it. I think we've altered ourselves in our identity and what even our first language. And now we have languages, we have relinquished ourselves in such negativity and in such judgmental ways.
Yeah.
But I think you had the right answer. I asked you that and you went and pondered on it. Or I asked the audience about what is the first language. And you're right. I
said crying.
It's crying.
Yeah. That's the first way in which you communicate with your parents.
Exactly.
When you're an infant.
Exactly.
When you have no cognitive thought at all.
Exactly. When there's no cognitive. And so, but it is the most powerful language. And you know what? It also, it's one of the sounds and languages that crosses barriers. It has no color. It has no gender.
Mm-hmm.
It has, you know, it just, and we have gotten into such a place about race and gender and identity. But crying, the sound of crying or weeping crosses, it doesn't matter what nationality you are, it sounds the same. It looks the same. It comes out the same. And there's no revision to that. There is no altering that.
An interesting fact about crying and tears. Did you know that the chemical makeup of tears, depending on the kind of cry you're having, is different? So they can look under a microscope and can tell the tears from someone who was crying happy tears,
mm-hmm.
They can look at the chemical makeup of how it looks under a microscope. If they were crying,
grief, pain,
all kinds of things. And I thought that was interesting because you're saying like the cry sounds the same, but there is just a
different reasons on why we do it.
Right. And you could, if you got down to the physical part of it and looked at it under a microscope, you could actually tell the difference.
You could identify it.
Yes.
It's called identify.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so what I kind of want to talk about is how we have taken and altered the sound of our language. And what I want to talk about is, you know, re-examine, redo, review, amend, improve, those kind of things. How can we begin to get better outcomes? And I think before we can get better outcomes, we have to identify what it is we need to redo. What is it that I need to review? What is it that I need to undo? What is it that I need to examine? What is it that I need, that there's an opportunity of a situation that I can rethink? I've said this in our other podcast about beliefs and about us coming out into the world head first, because our mind is so important. My beliefs takes me everywhere. It doesn't matter about my feelings. It's what I believe. And so I can believe, I can hear something and believe something. And then if I believe it, then that belief will take me down and navigate me down a trail that could be negative or positive or truth or not truth. It depends on what my belief systems are. And so one of the things I want to talk about when we revise, we make alterations or we alter something, I want to really talk about how we have begun to alter even our ability to make a sound. And instead, we have altered some of our crying. It has a different language. Some of our crying comes in blaming. You know, some of our tears or some of the sound that we cry comes out in projecting. It comes out in fear. It comes out in rejection. It comes out in those kind of things. And so if those are the foundational reasons that we are responding to something, then whatever it is we're responding to, that's what we believe. And if we believe it, then that's what it becomes. Does that make sense?
Totally does.
And so I just feel like that in this season or just in this time that we're in, we know that we're in the second year of the pandemic, that a lot of us have been isolated. We've had to revise how we operate. We've had to alter our living. We've had to wear masks. We've had to have tests. We've had to stay away from each other. We've had to rethink the things in our lives that we've been doing. Is it really what I want to be doing, or did I just do it because that was the ladder against the building that I decided to climb? And now do I want to come off that building? And how do I get off of it? I got to come back down and revise, and I got to come down that ladder and revise my life. And it's hard and it's difficult.
Yeah, it is.
Change is difficult. I don't care how you look at it. And that's why, you know, I really think about when we're talking about change, so often we can see the big picture of the change, but I don't think we see the small steps that it takes. And sometimes we get overwhelmed even with the small steps. And I think that we have to look at what, if I'm going to revise something about me or I'm going to alter something because I believe that the way that I'm thinking or believing or acting or behaving needs to be altered or revised, I've really got to go into the deeper why I was responding that way. If that makes sense.
It does. And you have to be fearless enough to be able to dig in there. Which we've talked about before.
Yeah, but yeah. I think you have to be fearless, but you also have to be willing to examine the motivation behind why you're doing it. Are you doing it for you or are you doing it for someone else? Do you want someone else to have a perception of you that is not true? Are you doing it because you really believe that this is worthwhile and, you know, your time? Today I was writing in my journal, and I was saying, you know, one of the things I wrote, and I'm going to read it. It was just so profound. You know, it wasn't profound. It's profound for me, but may not be profound for you or nobody else, but it's profound for me. And it says, today is my best day. It's the only 24 hours, 1,440 minutes, and 86,400 seconds that I have been given as a gift. I only have one moment. I'm only in the moment that I have now. Learning to breathe through each moment gives me this. It gives me peace, and peace is what I want to lead with, to pursue my passion, to be persistent in whatever it is I encounter, to have perseverance to push through when it gets difficult, because it will, because I know that with everything I deal with today has purpose. And so then I say, thank you, Lord, because I realized that in that moment, in that quiet space that I was in, that was all I had. So I can't change anything ahead of me. I can't change anything behind me. All I have is the moment that I'm in. And too often we try to revise the moment we're in and alter it with thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow, what happened yesterday, instead of embracing the moment. And I think that's where impulsivity comes in, anxiety comes in.
Oh, yeah.
I think that those are the spaces that that stuff enters in, chaos, disruption. And I just am in a space where I want peace.
Yeah.
And peace is not the absence of chaos. Audience, it's not. It's the ability to know when the chaos comes, how to position yourself and posture yourself with it.
Yeah, how to anchor yourself.
How to anchor yourself, yeah. What to do with it, how to do it, when to do it, how to step back from it, how to look at it from a different perspective, from a different perception, mm-hmm. and not look at it from what it is, because emotions are ours. But they're not always true. And so you have to begin to separate yourself from the feeling and the cognitive thought. Another thing that I'm learning, Brené Brown has a new book out, and it's really about mapping the heart is what it's about. I just bought it. And she really, you know, we know that she's good about, you know, shaming, talking about shame and authenticity. But the one thing that she talks about in this book is so amazing about remapping how your heart operates. And so that means to revise, to alter, to begin to look at a deeper level. And because she is a researcher, she researches, and she was talking about how if you ask someone, like if you just say to someone, what does love mean to you? They will come out with the first thing is what it don't mean. Like, I'll say, what does love mean? And they'll, you know, to you, they may say, well, what it don't mean is I should be able to trust you and I should be able to this. It's amazing how our hearts are easy. It's so easy for our hearts and our minds to go to negative than it is to positive. And so how can we help each other begin to revise and alter that thinking? But I think you have to be more aware of that and more present enough in the moment to realize that it's natural for us to deal with negativity and to judge and to be judgmental than it is for us to see the good and be curious. You're shaking your head. Why do you shake?
Well, because I'm thinking about how when we get in those spaces, we tend to, in those judgmental spaces, we have a hard time looking at ourselves and being honest and saying, wow, that's a horrible attitude I have there. Or I'm being a really shallow person, you know, just being super honest about where those thoughts and feelings are coming from. We judge ourselves on our intentions and we judge other people on their actions. So we tend to say, oh, well, I didn't really mean that. I just, whatever, will justify anything. And so that's just what I was kind of shaking my head about, is that people are so willing to judge other people and they aren't willing to look at themselves fearlessly and say, why did I think that way? The true reason as to why you thought a certain thought. And, you know, you were talking about feelings too. Somebody said this to me last week and I wrote it down in my journal because I thought it was so insightful. Like, we've talked about feelings and how feelings have no moral value. They're not always true. This person said that feelings are an indicator. And I was like, oh, That's really good. That's like a temperature gauge. Like, mm-hmm. it's an indicator of something else, that there's something deeper. I thought, man, that's insightful. So that was really good. So that's what I was thinking about when you were talking about feelings, about how they're indicators and that's it.
That's it. And it's just like, you know, when we talk about, you know, people, you know, we're Christians, so we talk about the Holy Spirit and the voice of God and how does he speak to you? Feelings are the same way. Feelings speak to you. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, they're indicators. They have a voice. I always tell people that if a feeling is pushing me, is it pushing me or pulling me? And so the question becomes, if it's pushing me, it usually, you know, like a push is like something. If I walk up to you and push you, you're going to say, oh, my God, why? What was that for?
Yeah. Why are you pushing me?
Yeah. But if I'm pulling you, usually I'm asking you to give me your hand. You know what I'm saying? Give me your hand so I can pull you across. So I think that when someone is pushed, when a feeling is pushing you, you have to step back and see what is the motivation for it. But if it's pulling you, like it's not really, it's not pushing you to a point of aggravation, but it's kind of pulling you along and you're thinking, the indicator, the instinct, what is that? You know, why is it, why do I keep feeling that way when I'm around that person? What is it that's pulling me towards that feeling? Not necessarily pushing me and trying to have its way, but just kind of gently pulling me along. And like you said, those are indicators of something is there and I must stop long enough to be curious and to investigate.
Yeah. And it might be something simple or it might be something complex. I think you know when you get to the truth of something. If you can resolve it, if after you've asked a million whys and you've gotten down and it feels like, oh, okay, that feels satisfactory, that's probably a truer thing, or at least that is for me. When I'm asking and I'm digging, if I finally feel like, okay, that feels resolved, then I know I've hit the real reason. But if I haven't, I'll be like, oh, that doesn't feel right.
Right. And I like the fact, like you said, that we tend to judge people based on their behaviors, but then deal with ourselves by our intentions.
Right.
And what I am in this season of time in my life is being very conscious of my intentions. And when I say that, for me, like, I really want to look at, you know, like, why would I, you know, like, what do I really want? If I go this route, what do I really want? And I'm going to give an example where for so long, as I think for my background, of, you know, you don't realize. And I think we were in a disc tested, you know, disc group or study talks about this person who's doing it, Pastor Benny, who's kind of facilitating. He says that some of the identity that we've come up with, a personality, didn't come from who we really were. It came from our environment and our parents. And, you know, we all know that on some level. But let's go deeper. You know, those things are so ingrained in us that they leak out at times that you don't even want the times you don't want them to. And if you're not self totally present with yourself, you can continue to say you're sorry for stuff that you don't even realize why you do it. And so intentions for me in this season is beginning in this time. I say season, I don't want people. And this time is learning that even with the best intentions, I don't have the right to tell someone how to feel about what I intended to do. And if they tell me that it hurt them, I cannot sit there and tell them that was not my intention. I need to be present enough and sensitive enough to think more about them than I do about me and say that, okay, forgive me for hurting you. And now still have the conversation. But I tend to see people say, well, that wasn't my intention. I'm sure you didn't go into it with that, but that doesn't mean your intentions did not hurt someone or ruin someone's life or create people on a path of putting, you know, gossip. I'm learning gossip on another level for me. Because even with, if I say something to you about somebody else, I have the power to change your lens about that person. And so being able to understand that on a deeper level than I used to, I'm learning that my greatest processor is God, who will not repeat anything I say. I'm learning that. And that is something I have to unlearn because I'm an out loud processor. And there's a part of me that like to talk. And I like to tell what I know. And I like to share it. And God is showing me that. You like that. And what is that doing? It's because there's something inside of me that says that I know more than you know. So let me tell you what I know. And I'm learning that if I know something, even if someone doesn't even tell me to share it, why am I sharing it? What is something that makes me feel a leverage? And I'm just being honest with Lakrita. And so God has shown me to revise that and to, you know, that equals that alteration or to alter that. I need to really get in the space in the middle and see what is that feeding in me? Why do I do that? Like, what is that for? And so far what has come for me is this still, it comes back from something deeper that says, I need you to know that I know more than you. And it's like, what, why do I need to know that? Why do I feel like I need you to know that about me? And so that is like becoming liberating to say, oh my God, it's like another level, another peeling behind, you know, certain stuff anymore. And just really learning my greatest person to vent to is God and just me. I don't need to go vent with other people because I have seen people say I'm just venting, but they really are gossiping. They really are sharing other stuff. And I think that we have safe spaces with each other in certain spaces. I'm not saying you can't share whatever, but you know, but you got to be mindful of when you're about to share something, what are you sharing and why are you sharing it? Does that make sense?
It does. It totally does. But you know, I want to go back really briefly to when someone says that was not my intention to hurt you. I think some people do use that as an excuse.
Oh, I do too.
And if they're saying that or justifying themselves, maybe is a something. But I don't think it's bad if someone says it was not my intention to hurt you and I'm sorry. Please forgive me. You know, I don't know what you think about that, but I don't think for me if I heard someone say, like, if you were to hurt my feelings and you were to say it was not my intention to do that, I'm sorry.
See, and I disagree.
I'd be like, oh, well, thank you.
Okay. And see, I'm in a space where I disagree with that because it goes back to what you said earlier, that then some kind of way in that moment of that person's pain, it still becomes about me. When I say, I didn't mean to, and I'm sorry, instead of, I hear you.
And I'm sorry. Well, that works too.
You know what I mean? I hear you and I'm sorry.
I think it's when people say it was not my intention. It's not my intention.
Well, I think it's the way people say that. But yeah. I have seen great conversations and really healthy ones and people say it. And I'm telling you, I have seen people be deflated in that moment when people say that was not my intention. Because for me, what I'm learning is that I'm still some kind of way turning the mirror back to me. That's for me. That doesn't have to be for the world. That's to me. And so if I'm only on that level of where insight right now, that's my level. Yeah. And I'm okay with it. I'm not telling the way you do it is you do it your way. But for me, I'm learning that for some reason, some way that it feels like I'm turning the mirror back onto myself. So gotcha. I'm going to be more conscious of when someone says you hurt me, I can actually say, forgive me.
Yeah.
And leave it at that. I don't have to say it wasn't my intention. You know what I mean? That's for me. Or I hear you. Forgive me. You know, I don't have to say anything else. And they can even say, I forgive you. And we can go on with the conversation. I don't know. But it's like for me, turning the mirror back. You know, I'm trying to revise and alter the mirror back to the person and even some things about myself. And that's why I say that, you know, revise means to, you know what I'm saying, to alter, you know what I mean? And that means to begin to repair and mend. Alter means to repair, to mend, to fix or to restore, to set right, to bring into a working order, to refit, to regulate, to maintain. That's what alter means for me. So I am just learning how to do those things in conversations and language and relationships and all of those ways. And it's been so amazing for me to really look at the resetting my outcomes, even in my thinking and my behavior, my body language, my facial expressions, just all of that.
Yeah. And it's funny when I think of those two words as a writer, to revise, is when I would get something back from an editor and they would say, maybe you need to think about something different here. Maybe think about a different word. So revision to me is like making something better. And then when I think of alteration, I literally think of a tailor who is like fixing something. They're cutting. They're
improving it.
They're changing it. Like, not that revision is not changing, but it just, to me, feels different. I guess, like I said, because I'm looking at the word revision through the lens of being a writer, mm-hmm. and how an editor will change that. They'll suggest. They won't make you change something. They'll say, you know, you wrote the sentence this way. It might sound better this way. Or maybe you need to explain this a little deeper. And yeah, like I said, in alteration is like, I can just see somebody with a measuring tape trying to adjust something to make it fit me. Right.
And I believe that for me and my relationship, God is doing that for me. He's making alterations.
He's coming at you with a measuring tape.
And he's cutting some things away for me. He's saying, you no longer can use that as an excuse, because you to know better is to do better. And to do better is to live better. And to live better is to be a better example, not for no one else, but just for you, LaGreta.
Yeah.
Just for your relationship with yourself and with me. And if other people get to eat from that fruit, that's a plus. You eating from your own fruit fills your life. You eating from me fills your life. I am the tree. You are the vine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is what matters the most.
Amen.
And so those kind of things he is teaching LaGreta in this time in my life. So he's revising and making alterations. He is cutting things away. He is saying things that I've put on my life need to be altered. No, you did that for this reason and why you did it. And this is now you need to let it go. I was all weekend was reading the new information I'm putting out for the ministry. And it had me weeping because I seen the revisions of someone writing it different, said the same thing that I've been saying, but the way they're presenting it is so much different than the way that I have presented it.
Yeah.
But it's my information. It's nothing different. The same words. It's just revised and altered. The alterations have made them soften and created the love. You can feel it. And I asked the Lord when I was weeping, these are my words that you gave me years ago. He said, but they were for then, and this is for now.
Yeah.
And being willing to make it, to make the alterations, to let someone else look at it and cut away from it and add to it and position it in a way that's going to communicate, because I know who I'm getting ready to wake up. And the way it was written then is the same word. It's my same scripture. But the way you present my scripture to this person and the way you present it to this person, this next generation or this next group of people are going to need it from this perspective.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was just amazing to see someone else take my words and rewrite them and put them in a way that broke my heart, but also prepared my heart at the same time.
They were a tailor.
They were tailored. And it was so amazing to see that.
Wow. They were word tailors.
Mm-hmm. They were. And it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I called them and they were just so grateful, because they said they have been holding their breath to see how I would respond to how they tailored the words. They were like, they said, it's your work. It's your 30 years. It's yours. But I tailored it based on what you say, that where you are now in your life and how you want to move forward.
Yeah. Because for a lot of folks out there who don't know, you're right in the middle of a reset of some aspects of what you're doing with ministry and stuff like that.
Well, so. And also just to give you, see, I believe that with every kind of work you do, you should have the courage enough to lay it on the altar of life, meaning everybody's got a different altar. When I say altar, You know, for me, it's the same way, alteration. You know, you lay it there and be willing to let people examine it outside of you to see if it still holds what it needs to hold and what needs to be possibly cut away so it can be presented. And because, see, there's nothing new up under the sun. I don't care if Brene Brown says it. I don't care if T.D. Jakes say it. I don't care who says it. There's nothing, Oprah Winfrey, it's nothing new up under the sun. They're all saying the same thing that God been saying. They're just learned how to alter it in a way for listeners not to be offended or feel too churchy, but they're saying the same thing. There's nothing new up under the sun.
Yeah.
From Genesis to Revelation, they're saying the same thing. They're saying the same thing. And that's what God is teaching me. There's nothing new here, Lakrita. People have just learned. And so what I'm asking you to do, even in 30 years of this ministry, is to still say the same thing that I've said, but I need you to possibly say it in a different way.
That's cool. That's really cool. I bet that was, I could understand why you were weeping. Just looking at your creative work, your artistry, given back to you with someone else's stroke over it. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a charrette. We had talked about that, how people move around a canvas and they just build on each other's work. Well, this wasn't a building. It was a representation of mm-hmm. your stuff. So it's like looking at everything with new eyes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it let me know that my eyes have become new. Again, my word for the year is perspective and perception.
Yep.
And so it's all about what I hold and what I see.
Yeah. Yeah. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Well, we can wrap it up there. I kind of hate to stop because this has been really good. So, but our next episode, we're going to be talking about repair equals mend. And you guys do not want to miss this. Take care.
Hi, guys. Every week we get the honor of spending time with you, sharing our hearts and offering insights into all the ways we get turned around as people and hopefully showing an escape route to better choices. Another place that is offering the same type of path for better opportunities is City Gospel Mission. Since 1924, they've been a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and to those needing job services. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, you can visit www.citygospelmission.org. That is www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2021 by Lakrita Bowman.